If you're of a certain cinema-going age, you may have heard that sound when you went to the cinema at some times during the 80s or even possibly the 90s, and it's the demonstration track from Dolby Stereo. And I love sound and cinema. I've always been a huge home cinema enthusiast, and I remember quite distinctly when I went from just listening to films on mono on a VHS to when I bought a hi-fi stereo VHS recorder, and I remember listening to Heat, and the difference that stereo made was absolutely incredible from what had gone before for me with mono. And when I'd kind of saved up enough money, I bought my first surround sound system. It was a Sony one. It was Dolby Stereo surround. And it literally, I think, changed the way I watched movies. I know I could never go back to just TV speakers again. And I've always been a big proponent of kind of staying up with technology. I remember the first time I went from Dolby surround sound to Dolby 5.1. And then we had kind of the True HD, the DTS HD formats that came along with Blu-ray. And in recent years, we've obviously had Dolby Atmos, which I'm still yet to have a screening of a Dolby Atmos film where I've been completely blown away by. And as yet, I haven't seen a film at the cinema on Dolby Atmos, something which I must get round to remedying one time. But I wanted with this podcast, when I kind of decided to kind of restart again and get a bit kind of more formats going, was to do episodes when I dive into a kind of a technical part of cinema, whether it be kind of a new widescreen format or whatever. And I thought it was a good place to start would be Dolby Stereo and what it means. And you've probably heard the name Dolby hundreds of times, maybe even on your TV remote, or that, you know, Dolby logo flashing up before a movie starts, as you would have heard on the little promo I played you at the start of this episode. But what I want to do is take you back to where all this began. It might be a question you have asked, and if it hasn't been a question you asked, I'm going to hopefully on this episode take you back in time and talk about the evolution of this format. And what we're going to be doing is looking how we went from flat mono sound to rich, immersive stereo and surround experiences, and what exactly was Dolby Stereo, how did it work, and why did it change everything. So I'm going to unpack the history, technology and lasting impact of Dolby Stereo from its 1970s origins to its influence over everything from Star Wars to modern digital surround sound. So before we get to the likes of Dolby Atmos and home cinemas and whatnot, we need to go back in time to the golden age of cinema. So if you were a cinema goer during its golden era, you'd of course gone to watch films on probably quite a large screen, and there'd have been more than adequate sound, but everything you heard would have been in mono, a single channel of audio squeezed into a narrow optical strip that ran along the side of the film. Everything, dialogue, music, explosions, was all mixed together, flattened into the same space. Even if, for example, an aeroplane flew across the frame, the sound would just be right there, smack bang in the middle. It simply did not move. And in the 1950s, studios began to try to push beyond mono. Cinerama and CinemaScope offered panoramic sound, and this was achieved by adding magnetic strips that carried up to 6 discrete channels. This was real stereo. But those systems were incredibly expensive, fragile and incompatible with the projectors in most theatres. Magnetic tracks wore out quickly and the tapes hissed, and the theatres weren't about to replace their equipment just in case all this was some kind of passing fad. So by the mid-1960s, film audio was stagnating. The visuals were most definitely getting bigger, but the sound was most firmly stuck in the past. But there was a saviour waiting in the wings, a young engineer called Ray Dolby. Dolby wasn't someone working within the Hollywood system. He didn't even work in film. He was actually an inventor who was obsessed with sound clarity. Born in Portland, Oregon in 1933, he was fascinated by tape recorders as a teenager, and by the early 1960s had worked at Ampex, helping design the world's first practical videotape recorder. But he had another idea, and that was how to make recorded sound cleaner. Magnetic tape was by nature quite noisy, a constant hiss buried quiet details, so he built something new, the Dolby A noise reduction system. How it worked was this: when you recorded audio, Dolby A would compress certain frequencies, particularly the quiet high ones, making them more louder and more resilient to noise. Then, during playback, it would expand them back to normal, pulling the hiss down and restoring natural dynamics. It was incredibly effective, and by the late 1960s, Dolby A had become a staple in recording studios around the world, from Abbey Road to Capitol Records in Los Angeles. So, when filmmakers began to complain about the noisy optical soundtrack, Roy Dolby's name was already established in the community and synonymous with quiet and quality. And in 1971, A Clockwork Orange became the first film ever to use Dolby A noise reduction and was soon the industry standard. But Dolby was not done yet. He wondered what the future of sound could be, and the answer to this would be Dolby Stereo. But there was a challenge, which was how could you bring multi-channel sound, something like stereo or surround, into theatres without creating a whole new expensive system? And that is where the magic of Dolby Stereo came in. So the question remains then, how do you create a surround sound experience using a film strip that only has room for 2 audio tracks? Well, the answer was Dolby's matrix encoding, a clever system that could hide 4 channels of information inside 2. And here is how it worked. The sound mix began with 4 channels, left, center, right, and a single surround channel for ambient effects. Dolby engineers mathematically encoded those 4 into 2 tracks called the left total and the right total. They then used subtle phase shifts and amplitude cues, and during playback, a matrix decoder, Dolby's CP100 or CP200 processor, analysed those phase cues and separated the signals back into the original 4. Left and right speakers created width, the centre channel anchored dialogue, and the surround channel added atmosphere. This decoding wasn't perfect, there was some crosstalk and channel bleed, but it was a huge leap over mono, and because it fit on a standard optical soundtrack, it was compatible with existing projectors and could still play in mono theatres. And this compatibility would be the key to Dolby's ongoing success. They also added Dolby A noise reduction to the optical track, cutting background hiss and improving dynamic range. And later, a simplified version called Dolby Spectral Recording, or Dolby SR, further boosted fidelity. Dolby Stereo made its debut in 1975, with Listomania, but it was 2 subsequent films where the format truly came into its own: A Star Is Born and then of course Star Wars. We'll be right back. So in 1977, when the Millennium Falcon blasted into hyperspace and the orchestra swelled in Dolby Stereo, audiences very much felt they were part of the movie. For the first time, sound moved through space, music surrounded you, it was cinematic immersion like never before. And by the end of that summer, theatres across America were racing to install Dolby processors. Sound had become as important as the picture, and Dolby had very much played a part in changing this forever. You heard width, depth and space, and dialogue that felt anchored dead centre, music that was wrapping around you, and subtle ambient effects in the rear speakers. In reality, cinema and sound had now really come alive, and Dolby Stereo transformed the act of watching a movie into a more sensory event, and filmmakers too began to notice. George Lucas said of the sound system that it had become another camera, a way to direct attention through space, and Francis Ford Coppola used it for Apocalypse Now to simulate the chaos of war and helicopters sweeping overhead. Between 1977 and 1983, nearly every major studio film was released in Dolby Stereo. It became the sound prestige format, and movie posters proudly began to display the Double D logo, a promise of sonic immersion. And indeed, I collect old film posters, and I will deliberately look out for ones with that logo on it. Indeed, Francis Ford Coppola's own team built an entire Dolby Stereo 70mm 6-track system for it. And I'd just like to add at this point as well that there will be, in the next season of the 24 Frames cast, an episode about 70mm blow-ups, in which I'm going to go into the 70mm 6-track soundtracks a lot more. But he actually built his own system for it that had discrete channels on magnetic strips, using Dolby noise reduction to control the sound quality. And you just need to listen to films from that period, things like Blade Runner, E.T. and Raiders of the Lost Ark. The sound no longer seems in the background, it's very much part of the narrative. Think of the sound the ball makes as it rolls down towards Indy in Raiders of the Lost Ark, or the opening explosions in Blade Runner. But as the format was thriving in cinemas, there was very much a demand to have the systems in place in people's homes. So early in the 1980s, Dolby re-engineered a system for consumer media. Enter Dolby Surround. Essentially, this was a simplified version of the Dolby Stereo Matrix, VH tapes and broadcast TV. It used the same principle, encoding four channels into two, then decode them with a home receiver. And by 1987, Dolby released ProLogic with improved MAF, had sharper steering, a true centre output, and controlled mono sound. Suddenly, the living room could host the likes of Ghostbusters, Top Gun, or Back to the Future in something that felt like a cinematic experience. And this leap also influenced how sound was mixed. Engineers had to assure that the matrix surround wouldn't distort when folded down to stereo, a delicate balance act of phase, frequency and dynamics. And Dolby had bridged the gap between professional and personal living. For the first time, audiences expected a sense of space, and sound designers were forced to deliver. Then in the 1990s came a seismic shift, the move from analogue optical soundtracks to digital. In 1992, Dolby Digital debuted with Batman Returns, and this time the audio wasn't encoded in the soundtrack Lightstrap, it was a digital code printed between the sprocket holes on the films itself. This enabled 6 discrete channels, left, centre, right, left surround, right surround, and that thunderous 0.1 LFE subwoofer channel. No more decoding was necessary. Every channel carried its own independent signal, yet the DNA of Dolby Stereo was still there. The compatibility, the fidelity, and a respect for the art of mixing. And then from there came even more formats: Dolby Digital, EX, Dolby True HD, and finally where we are now with Dolby Atmos, which lifted the concept into three-dimensional space, literally mapping sound as objects that can move overhead or behind with you. I am, for the record, as I stated at the start, yet to be convinced of that format. However, every Dolby innovation after 1975 traces back to that first decision to fold 4 channels into 2 and unfold them again. And I think Ray Dolby sums it up best himself, which is when he said, "When sound is truly transparent, the audience forgets the technology and feels only the story." And this is, I suppose, Dolby Stereo's legacy. Dolby Stereo, I think, is the perfect fusion of engineering and imagination to aid filmmakers and storytellers. It's one person who simply kept asking questions and kept innovating until we got a result that we could all enjoy. And although I've never read anything, I imagine Ray Dolby must have been such a huge fan of cinema and just a real, I suppose, a film nerd at its core. And I think that's why it goes on and on, innovating and improving, because his legacy is one of constantly wanting audiences to be more immersed in cinema. I'm really genuinely interested where we go next. If you think kind of Atmos is the end, I dare say in a few years there'll be some other kind of Dolby surround sound system that will appear and continue to push the envelope of technology, imagination and creativity. So that's going to be it for this episode of the 24 Frames Cast. I hope you're still awake. Please indulge me on these kind of more nerdy stuff. And I would just add as well, if you do have a decent home cinema, I often find it's quite interesting to compare and contrast Dolby Stereo tracks and the current remixes that we get on Blu-ray discs. I always look out if it says, for example, the recent Criterion release of Sorcerer had the original 2.0 Dolby Stereo surround and the new 5.1 remix, and I think it was the same. It might have been ported over from the other Blu-ray, but I listened to both over the course of a weekend, and I really do think that those Dolby Stereo mixes are a lot better. In almost all the examples I've listened to, I recently bought Outland as well on UHD, and I compared the kind of the various soundtracks on that, and I think they're always so much more balanced and better mixed. There is a real fashion at the moment to add loads of bass to the LFE channels that I think a lot of sound mixers do. A lot of times it just drowns the films out. I know Walter Murch was a big advocate of, you know, doing respectful mixes when it comes to doing this, and certainly his Apocalypse Now releases, I think, are an example, probably the best sonic examples of I can think of. Let me know if you have any kind of thoughts on this subject. I know it's something which a lot of people kind of like geek out on quite a bit. But as I said, that's going to be it for this episode. I will be back next week with another one. I hope you enjoyed it. Many thanks for listening. Bye.